Dungeons and Crusaders, you are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Holosuite Media. By the will of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Voxcast are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Oi!
What is it, you maggot?
Tahirmes is on their way to Arcona. They're gonna get there before us.
You worthless git. Who cares if they get there before us? Either way, we'll cramp them good.
I know, but they've already been shooting at the spiky Hermes for weeks now.
What? Get the boys on the rocks. It's time for war!
Greetings, Crusaders. Welcome to Vox Arcona Mission 26, recording on Sunday, November 22nd, 2015, and coming to you from the Battlefleet Charon in the Segmentum Obscurus. I am Gigamite, and I am pleased to share the Fleet's Vox Relay with Katsu. How are you doing, dude?
I'm doing good. I'm going to strangle a cat if it doesn't shut the hell up. How about you?
I'm not doing too bad. Been working a lot this week, but I've been scratching my Star Wars itch this week.
I've been working on the current portion of the week, but like last weekend all the way till Wednesday I was actually off, and I have been cruising the wastelands looking for supplies and wondering why exactly they're giving me 17 million settlements to build.
Nice.
But that's a completely different discussion.
Oh, of course. That's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast that we don't do. But anyway, we are here to talk about Eternal Crusade, Gigabyte and I. And we got a lot of stuff, and we also have another Imperial data, or we have a data slate. Let's put it that way. So at this point, we will go in. No short story from Graham McNeil again this week. However, MMORPG did do an interview with Nathan where they discussed the progression with the Eldar.
Yeah, I have to say, I read through that and I was a bit... It was a bit lackluster. But then you kind of expect that with things like Eldar and stuff.
Yeah, well, first off, it's the Eldar. You know, sissy, tree-hugging, knife-eared dirt worshippers. But, but the other thing is... you know, the progress is steady, it's happening. You're looking at, you know, a number of different things. You know, Nathan talked about it, but again, a lot of this stuff is all stuff that you get in Into the Warp. Uh-huh. It's interesting to read because, of course, if you're sitting at your work and you've got nothing better to do... Well, if you're sitting at your desk and you have nothing better to do, then you can go to MMORPG.com because that's really how I kill a lot of my time. So, other than that, we head into the Warp 42. I have been working all weekend. I was telling Darren, I guess a sufficient portion of my job kind of went down the tubes this week. So I've literally been on like... crazy workload, so I haven't really had a chance to do this, but you caught into the Warp, right?
Yes, I did.
So what jumped out at you?
So the interesting things I found in the production update, they are making changes to the stamina reduction system, depending on sort of the attacks you use and the equipment that you carry. So things like, sprinting doesn't drain your stamina anymore, which is very nice. Things like rolling will drain your stamina. Clanging with a large weapon. So if you've got like a dagger or power knife and you clang with a large weapon, like a power sword or something, that will drain your stamina faster. Apparently the Storm Shield will have its own version of stamina reduction, but they're not giving us any information on that yet. I presume it'll stop you draining your stamina. Something like that.
Well, Well, yeah, because it's a giant freaking shield. It's designed to block things.
Exactly. The Storm Bolter apparently has been adjusted. Apparently it's a little bit OP. Although they haven't really adjusted it that much. They said they've adjusted the rate of fire, the spread, and the recoil. Didn't look like much in the video, but they said the main focus was adjusting other classes against the Storm Bolter. So at a range of about 25 meters, apparently the advantage will go to the Bolt Gun. At a range of 10 meters, the advantage will be to the Storm Bolter. And anything closer than that will obviously be close combat.
See, I horrifically disagree with this. And the reason that I horrifically disagree with this is that a Storm Bolter is two bolt guns strapped together, and it's an Assault 24. It's designed... Here's the deal. Like, it's supposed to be better than a bolt gun. Because, you know, a bolt gun is your standard armament for a Terminator, or for a Marine. A Storm Bolter is your standard armament for a Terminator. And so, if somebody's carrying a Storm Bolter, if a regular Joe Marine is carrying a Storm Bolter, then that regular Joe Marine isn't a regular Joe Marine. He's a veteran, or he's an officer, like a captain, or a whatever. He's not just some scrub Marine. I don't like this... I don't like giving the Storm Bolter to tacticals or to anybody other than Terminators, because...
Well,
the thing is this, and this is why. Here's my argument, and you can agree with me or disagree with me after you hear it. The thing is this, the Storm Bolter exists mechanically to be a middle ground between the bolt gun and the heavy bolter. Would you agree with me so far?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I suppose.
So the thing is this, if you're giving me a bolt gun, and then you're giving the same me a Storm Bolter, like, say, if you're giving a tactical a bolter, and you're giving a tactical a Storm Bolter, why am I not choosing the Storm Bolter every single time? Like, why?
True.
Which means Jay-Z is going to bust in and start singing. No, what it means...
I'm going to let you finish, Katsu, but...
You can let me finish. But the thing is this, if you're giving me a bolt gun and you're giving me a Storm Bolter, like, why would I not take the Storm Bolter every time? And so what the design decision is being, apparently, is let's gimp the Storm Bolter. The thing is this, if we gimp the Storm Bolter now, then are we going to have a magical, super awesome, different Storm Bolter in the hands of Terminators? Or are Terminators going to have this weaker Storm Bolter when they're not going to be able to move as fast unless you make Terminators move as fast as regular Marines, which that shouldn't happen. I see this as being a problem. You know what I'm saying? That's my stance. Yeah. Feel free to agree or disagree.
Yeah, well, I can see what you mean. I mean, and there'll be something on that in a bit as well, but as we've seen from other games like World of Warcraft and stuff like that, more often than not, lore takes it in the ass in terms of, you know, balance, because gameplay comes first, lore comes second. So, you know, in some cases I can see where they're going with this, because obviously they need to get the gameplay balance right. And in terms of even having the Storm Bolter there as an option for tactical, since the Space Marine game, it's kind of been a standard thing. You know, everyone, I mean, I played the Storm Bolter almost exclusively in Space Marine. Absolutely loved it in that game. And that's really what made it a big thing for this game, was the fact that it was in Space Marine and it was very, very popular in Space Marine. But, yeah, I can see where you're going.
Okay, well, here's the deal. Like, the behavior team has been going out of its way to create as close to a lore-appropriate game as possible. Like, this goes into my same argument with not restricting Terminators. Like, I think Terminators should be restricted all to hell and back. I think that it should be something that's earned somehow. You know, I think that it's not something that you can... I just don't think that it's something that you just... You know, oh, well, I want to pay this, so I pay the requisition points and I can go play a Storm... You know, a Terminator. And even then, if you're nerfing the Storm Bolter, if you're nerfing the Storm Bolter and you're giving it to a Terminator, then like I don't know. It's the whole idea. First off, the whole idea of putting a Storm Bolter in a Marine's hands is completely, like, should not be allowed. Which is, that's why the Grey Knights are so impressive, is the Grey Knights have Storm Bolters as standard gear. I mean, like, at this point, why don't we just let Tacticals also carry power weapons? Or let Tacticals do whatever. Now, granted, according to the Codex, they've spent, you know, like 50 to 100 years as a Devastator, 50 to 100 years as a, well, like 50 to 100 as a Scout, 50 to 100 as a Devastator, 50 to 100 as an Assault, and then they get to be Tactical Marines. So, like, they know how to use all the stuff, but the point of the matter is, like, I just...
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I can see where you're going. And, you know, yes, Behaviour has gone out of their way to try and create a game that is as close to the lore as possible. But at some point, something's got to give. You know, at the end of the day, this is a shooter game, and as okay. we all know, balance in a shooter game is extremely hard to achieve. No.
See, here's the problem. It's not that it's a shooty game. The problem is, pardon my French, but the problem is, and I love you, Darren, I love you to death, Gigabyte, but everybody wants to play with the shiny toys, and nobody wants to actually stick with the lore. I want my dirty machine gun. Like, that's why. You know, Tacticals are like, I don't want to have to do the players are like, I don't want to have to do the legwork to earn Terminator armor, even though it's supposed to be a stupid crazy honor. No, I just want you to give me my machine gun and give me my power fist and give me my Terminator armor so that I can play with it whenever I want to. Because that's what I want. Me, what I want. That's it. Like, here's the deal. I will probably suck at this game. If my KDR, like, if my mental KDR right now is anything like, you know, my normal shooter games, I would never even see Terminator armor for myself, and that's fine. Like, I get that that's who I am. Besides, I'm going to be running around as a sorcerer anyway, or as an Imperial Fist. So, the thing is this, like, okay, so we're going to give, you know, okay, so as a tactical Marine, you can equip, you know, a bolt gun, or you can equip a Storm Bolter. And I just don't like the let's give everybody all the toys thing. I don't know, maybe this is my 40k neckbeard showing, but like, I don't have a problem with telling people that if they want something, they have to work for it. I'm, you know, now this is the person who has literally spent, you know, I've had 13 or so different armies, and I've spent $400 or more on each army every time I've built an army. So, like, I'm the guy who's like, what, you want to step to me and build a full army? Well, then you better build the army, and you better spend the money. Like, I don't have a problem being the guy that's like, what, Terminator armor? Yeah, I'm going to have to work for Terminator armor, and maybe it involves me going into hives, and maybe it involves me doing, I don't know, PvP, or maybe it involves me shiving 28 devs from behind while wearing a pink tutu and aqua pumps. Like, I don't know. But the point of the matter is, if I want it, I want it to be an achievement when I see somebody wearing it. Not, oh, look at me, I spent points. Like, using Planetside as an Planetside's a bad example because of max suits that can get spawned based on nanomaterials, blah, blah, blah. Like, each chapter only has 100 suits of Terminator armor, you know? So seeing one or five or 10 on the field, unless you're a Dark Angel, like seeing a group of Terminators on the field, that's something, you know, maybe not in the board game, maybe not in the miniatures game right now, because so many things can slag Terminator on. Sure. But I just giving Terminator equipment to regular Joes, because let me back up even further. Okay. So Titus got to carry around a Storm Bolter because he's a freaking captain. Like, discounting multiplayer, Titus gets to carry whatever the hell he wants. He's got the little cutout in his codex for war gear, and he's a captain. He can equip whatever the hell he wants to equip. So, like, I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. This is Matt the Fluff Monster. Anyway. So, what else was going on?
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but just to add one other thing in there, I mean, yes, the gaming culture nowadays has become very lazy. I'll admit that. But, I mean, going back to, say, Star Wars Galaxies, for instance, players will work for something when they feel that it's worth the work. I mean, I remember playing Star Wars Galaxies and trying to become a Jedi. Oh my god! That quest was so long and so involved. But when you made it, it was recognized that you had gone through shit to get there. So gamers will go through hell and back to achieve something that they feel is worth it. But I can see what you mean by, you know, yes, the gaming culture nowadays is along that lines of, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. I want to spend money to buy, get this stuff now. But well, I think if given the opportunity, people will work through, you know, God knows what to get something they feel is worth it.
Well, the problem is this, and this is, you know, admittedly, Eternal Crusade is the only shooter that I'm currently playing. If you were to look at my desktop right now, I've got a crap ton of Fallouts, and even when I play Fallout, I'm exploring and using VATS and not making this a first-person shooter game. When I'm playing any other game, I'm not playing a shooter, I'm playing an MMO. So I have no problems with the work and the grind and the repetition and the doing all the things. But the problem is, this game is in a weird balance, because on the one hand, we've got the lore, and people are being attracted to this game because of the lore, and because of, I get to be Dominus Buttmunchus Aurelius Maximus Stonicus Stompafasicus. Like, they get the fluff, and they get the fact that Terminators are supposed to be rare, and they get the fact that this is trying to be the 40K universe. And that's the group that has been, like, here's the deal. That's the group that has been sustaining behavior this whole time, and sustaining Eternal Crusade, and blowing the $120, or the $80, or the $40. Like, they're the guys that are blowing this cash to support this game, because we love this game. And then on the other hand are the guys that are going to get in after you launch the game, and they're your shooter nerds, and they're going to be the guys that, what? I get to be a guy in power armor. What's it do? Oh, it buffs my damage stat. Right? Like, the fluff means nothing to them. They just want a shooter.
Yeah.
20 minutes after they're shooting, or they're gonna pull an Angry Joe where they're like, wait, I'm a Devastator. Why can't I cap this point? Well, you know what? This game is dumb, and I'm gonna log out and go play Battlefront, or I'm gonna log out and go play Call of Duty, or Black Ops, or games that are gonna be dedicated shooter games. The benefit of this, and it's sort of niche, but it works, is that you're targeting the audience for the fluff. Because here's the deal, if Behavior wanted to make a crap ton of money, they didn't need a 40K game. They could have just made a shooter in Unreal, and they would have been happy. But if they're building a 40K game, and they want it to look 40K, and they want to play 40K, then by God, let's play 40K. Like, that's my argument. That's my thing, and if we stay on this subject, I'm just going to keep ranting. So
let's move on.
We need to go to the Q&A.
The Q&A. Just to add on to that little Stormbolt conversation there, someone did ask about
Stormbolters. Let me tell you about Stormbolters. No, I'm kidding.
Someone did ask about Stormbolters versus Combi Bolters and how they'll be different. Obviously, I mentioned this, I think, last episode. It'll be interesting to see how different they make them. Brent did mention that apparently there'll be different mods and bits and pieces you can apply to them to make them work differently. Obviously, we've yet to see what anything like that looks like right now, but that'll be quite interesting to see.
Here's the deal, and maybe Behavior will listen to us on this, maybe not, I don't know. But what I want is whatever the range increment for Stormbolters works out to be. Mm-hmm. Like, I want them both to have the same range increment. But what I want is I want Stormbolters to have a little bit higher rate of fire, but they'll still have the same kind of bullet drift that they do. They're not going to be as tight. The grouping isn't going to be as tight. But I want Combi Bolters to have a tighter grouping. Because the thing is this, Stormbolter is Assault 2. So it's rapid fire. It's not rapid fire, because Combi Bolters are rapid fire. But
it's like a machine gun type.
Well, the thing is this. Storm Bolters are assault 2. So they're designed to be shooting at 24 inches, even if you move and you charge and you assault and you do all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Combi Bolters are 2 bolt guns that are strapped together, which makes them twin-linked. So they're twin-length, rapid fire. So you can stand still and shoot one shot at 24, but it's twin-linked, so if you miss, you get to re-roll. So what I would like to see is a higher rate of fire, but the same amount of bullet drift on a Storm Bolter, whereas a Combi Bolter, maybe a slower rate of fire, but a tighter grouping, even if your reticle's spacing out. See what I'm saying? Well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, never mind. That's a Storm Bolter argument. Moving on.
Let's move on. Someone did ask about the Rogue Trader store. Sorely lacking at the moment, although I think in the interview that Nathan gave, they did mention that there'd be more stuff on the Rogue Trader store soon. But someone asked about the limited items. Will there be more of them, basically? So they were a bit confused over what they meant by that, but Brent basically asked both parts of the question. So there'll be more of the limited items that are currently in the Rogue Trader coming back. But new limited items won't be coming our way anytime soon, annoyingly enough. But that does mean I can pick up my Fenris pattern power axe, because I neglected to do that.
Let's see what happens there.
Yeah. Eldar fleet of foot, how will that be represented in-game? Brent basically said that they'll be able to climb over things faster, turn faster, things like that. They're not really looking at representing the fleet of foot as such in the game. It just means the Eldar will be faster and stuff.
Dear people who are getting ready to play Eldar, make sure your computer can handle accelerated graphics.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Apparently, according to Human, there will be an in-game store prototype, hopefully by Christmas, which would be quite interesting to see.
Wait, in-game store prototype? Like, what did they mean by that?
Basically, the Rogue Trader store in-game.
I thought they were like yes, we'll be having I thought you were saying like, yeah, we'll have, you know, copies in GameStop and copies. And I was like, no. What? Anyway.
No. Someone asked about changing lock on to a tab button as you would normally have in MMOs. Brent said if they did that, then it wouldn't work. It would work as a toggle rather than a hold. Which, to be honest, I much prefer myself being an MMO player. But he mentioned they're planning to allow for binding of a hold or a toggle at some point in the future. I personally think that'd be much nicer to have a toggle myself.
Well, I like this because, first off, like, people dance around a whole lot, and I personally would love to lock on and be a more accurate shot. But also, as a sorcerer, I want to be able to keybind members of my squad so that I can just reach out and touch them with my psychic powers. That's me.
Yeah, no, that would be very good. And actually, on the subject of sorcerers,
yay!
Someone asked, how many spells can a sorcerer carry on their loadout? Brent said 2 or 3, but currently only 2. He didn't really elaborate on that because he moved on to Godmark sorcerers.
Wait. On the show notes, on the next topic, there's that last sentence. Who said that?
Brent.
Brent, I love you, you magnificent bastard. Go ahead.
So on the subject of Godmarked sorcerers, as he said, Tzeentch will be more offensive, Nurgle will be more quote-unquote debuffy, and Slaanesh will be more buff-orientated. Corn sorcerers apparently will instantly explode because
Brent
hates sorcerers.
Brent, I love you, you magnificent bastard. That's a direct quote that they instantly explode, and I love you because it brings tears to my eye holes.
I thought it was quite funny myself, actually. apparently, the Storm Shield will be the next weapon in game.
Yay, can I beat people with it?
No. What? I think we've already had that question asked in one of the Into the Warps, actually, and they said, no, you can't use it as a weapon.
I haven't there aren't any real shields in Fallout, but there are shields in Skyrim, and I love running around. Like, I played the first, I don't know how many little, I don't know, first couple of hours of Skyrim, just running around bashing people with shields and just enjoying the crap out of it, because that's what I love
shield
to do.
Shield bash is a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I think that that should happen in Eternal Crusade. It's just, yeah. I just want to run around and beat people with a shield. No real reason
with
other
than
that.
A shield surrounded by a power field.
Right. Okay.
And apparently, last but not least, apparently we shall have a world map in game next year with what they are calling the strategic layer, quote unquote.
Yep, which is what we talked about a number of episodes back.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea of the idea of planet side. Here's the deal, guys. Like, let me back up a second. Like, in reading the roadmap to the open world. And the world map and how it's all going to play out. Like, the easiest way to describe it is go download Planet Side and look at how that map works. Don't play that game. Come back and play Eternal Crusade. But look at how that map works. Look at how the interface works. Like, from everything they're describing, there's going to be a more tabletop-y feel to it. A couple episodes back, we described how this game with the warlord mechanics and everything else sort of feels like playing a game with your friends at your local game store. Oh, sorry, let me translate that to British. Playing a game with your mates down at the local club. Was that right? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
way to prove your xenophobia, Matt. Good job.
And we're walking. Colonial xenophobia. Yeah. Yes, we know.
Hey. You shut your mouth. We're patriots. I don't know about this colonial nonsense.
Damn communist.
Anyway, one last thing about Eternal Crusade before we turn to the 40K universe and the data slate. We, Eternal Crusade, have been given three Captain Pack keys. And
you mean
we are
at Vox Arcona.
We at Vox Arcona. Eternal Crusade has three captain's keys too. But Vox Arcona, us, Vox Arcona, have three Eternal Crusade Captain's Pack keys. That's what I was trying to say. And here's how we're giving them away. Key number one, we are calling the Raven Guard pack. And the Raven Guard pack, yes, the Raven Guard pack is being given away to one of our Twitter followers. Get it? Raven Guard Twitter, it's a bird. Yeah. Anyway, on December 1st. So what will happen is if you follow at Vox Arcona, then you will receive a chance at receiving that captain's pack. Now, it's not an upgrade. However, if I talk to Katie and I'm like, hey, the guy that won is already a whatever person and wants the upgrade to captain. We can talk to Katie, maybe get the code switched around or whatever.
Just on that, I can confirm, because I also got a warrior pack from somewhere before the game went to alpha. I applied it to my account just to see what would happen. And it just basically just adds the points on. And I think gives you extra character slots as well. At least it did for my account.
Okay, so that's the first one, is the Raven Guard pack. The second one is the Word Bearers pack. And the Word Bearers pack will go to one person that has liked us on Facebook. Easy enough, go to Vox Arcona, like the fan page. On December 1st, we will draw and we will announce the winner of that contest. And then the third one, give me a second, I have to pull this up, because there's some specific stuff we've asked for here.
I've got it in front of me if you want.
Oh, well, why don't you go ahead and tell them about our third contest?
So yes, the third pack we are calling the NDA pack. Basically, all you need to do is write an approximately 100-word essay about how much you love Eternal Crusade, without including any information that will violate your NDA, obviously. Duh. Email that to us at voxarcona@gmail.com, and on December 1st, we shall review them And the entry that gets closest, that gets the closest without actually violating the NDA, will win the captain's pack.
And everybody can thank my wife for that one, because she was like, this is totally the contest that you should run for the third pack, which is why it exists, because I listen to my wife.
It is a very good idea. It was
pretty funny, yeah.
The Gigabyte seal of approval on that one.
It has the Gigabyte seal of approval. Well, there you go. So that's the important things. So really go and, you know, go and follow us on the tweet machine, go and like us on the Facebook machine, and write us a quick essay. Let us know what you like about 40K, about Eternal Crusade without violating the NDA, and whoever gets the closest to telling us cool stuff without violating their NDA will get the pack. Anyway, and if you aren't currently a person that plays Eternal Crusade, technically you're not violating any NDAs. So there you
Precisely.
Go.
Precisely.
Yeah, pretty neat. Anyway, so on with the show, and we're getting closer. We're getting closer. Why don't you do the miniatures main site, because I want the next thing.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
I call it.
I can hear you salivating.
Uh huh. I had already had to change my keyboard twice.
So the miniatures games. What's going on in the world of 40K? On the main site, the main thing that they're highlighting is the new Warzone Damocles Limited Edition, which is basically a big rules set for the Warzone Damocles setting. Contains both Warzone Damocles books, Kalyon and Montka, which, if you know the Warzone Damocles setting, it's for the Tau Empire, Cadia, the White Scars, and Raven Guard, with a few Imperial Assassins chucked in there, apparently. But this limited edition is limited to 1,250 copies worldwide. That's, over here at least, it's £125. I don't know about dollars. Get it while you can, I think, because that's probably going to go pretty quick.
I like the look of the Tau. I have liked the way the Tau play. But like the chapters that are involved don't really interest me, and I can't buy a new Tau army. So guys, yeah. 1250 worldwide, definitely make sure you get your limited edition Warzone Damocles, because the Tau are cool. Like if I could rebuild an army. Like, I built a Tau army, but it was mostly, like a Pathfinder Fire Warrior gun line army.
Nice.
Like, Pathfinders were advanced deploying and then penning while the rifles ate people up. But I just never picked up enough firepower because I hated putting the Devilfish together, or the Hammerhead. Either way, it's same body.
Yeah. I don't blame you there. I'd be able to paint it together.
Yup.
So... Let's move on to Forge World, and Katz is chomping at the bit.
So, here we go. Ooh, I feel the spirit upon me. Ooh.
And breathe.
Ooh. Brothers and sisters, heretics and renegades, people of all persuasions. Let me tell you, brothers and sisters, Specialist Games Studio is back. It has a returned. Oh my God, can you feel
Hallelujah.
The spirit on you? Hallelujah. Specialist Game Studio is back. It is a division of Forge World. What is Specialist Games? It used to be known as Fnatic, and then before that it was known as Specialist Games. It is responsible for all of the off-brand games, or say off-brand games, all the games that they've put out before and then they've taken off and then they brought back a little bit and then they've taken off again. To give you an idea, what games are there? Go ahead, ask me. Somebody ask me, what games did Specialist handle?
What games did Specialist Games do then, Cutsy?
I am glad you asked. Specialist Games did Battlefleet Gothic. It did Space Hulk. It did Necromunda, Blood Bowl, Epic, Gorkamorka. And also, Specialist Games, the new Specialist Games, will be picking up support for Execution Force, Betrayal at Kalth, etc.
And not to mention my favorite game, Mordheim.
But here's the deal, and this is why I am so... Whew, brothers and sisters, first off, First off, this was not announced through some secondary source. If you have the Games Workshop app on your iPhone, or probably on an Android as well, it was given to us as a news item. It's official. Stores have been directed to confirm that this is in fact true. So, it's going to be at least a year before products hit shelves, but Games Workshop has sent down word to retailers to confirm this rumor is a fact. Why this is important. Oh my god. This move makes so much sense. It is such a great idea. And the reason that is because Vermintide and Deathwatch have been doing amazingly well. And the video game ports of Blood Bowl 2, Deathwatch is a video game as opposed to a role-playing game, Space Hulk, Battlefleet Gothic, the hype for Battlefleet Gothic.
Oh, so much hype.
But Space Hulk, Blood Bowl 2, they've been massively successful. The game hasn't been released yet, like Eternal Crusade, like Battlefleet Gothic Armada, they are receiving such a massive hype from the fan base, who will no doubt play the games because they can't play a current version of the miniature game. So,
and I mean, these games were so beloved when they first came out.
Well, the thing is this, they still are. Like, to this day, yeah. I have friends of mine that play Orc who have been murderous to find a copy of Gorka Morka or an updated version of Gorka Morka or anything.
But back in the day when they first came out, I remember going into a Games Workshop store and for, Christ, maybe a year or two after they came out, they were still the dominant games in Games Workshop stores.
Right, exactly. So, the thing is, like, it has been an... Anyway, so...
Put your teeth back in.
Oh my god. Specialist Game Studio. So, the thing is this. Like, Specialist Games is... Like, I'm over the moon for this decision. It makes so much sense for them to do. And it's an olive branch to the community who doesn't like them very much. Because they have because they've killed these games. And here's the thing. This is what I would dig about Specialist. I don't know how familiar you are with being as the Mini Bite is not quite old enough for the Disney Vault yet, but you know how Disney will release a movie to DVD for, I don't know, like 6 months to a year,
yeah.
And then they'll put it back in the vault until a couple of years later. The thing is, it creates that kind of, I don't want to say creates that kind of false hype, but it creates an urgency to pick up the game. Specialist could do something very simple, very similar to that, wherein they release Battlefleet Gothic, and they're only releasing so many copies of it, and then afterwards it goes back into the Specialist vault, because what's going to happen is this. Like, okay, the molds are there, they've produced it, they're going to sell their production run, and in the meantime, say they've sold Gothic, Blood Bowl, and Necromunda in this wave, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then next year, they go Space Hulk, Epic, Gorka Morka, and Betrayal at Kalth. And then they put that back in the vault for a year, you know? So, like, and run them in cycles. And even if they're only out of print for a year, you know what I'm saying? It creates enough impetus or enough motivation for the sales urgency, but also it gives them a chance that while they're selling Gothic, Necromunda, Blood Bowl, they can be, while those are selling, they can be revising Space Hulk, Epic, Gorka Morka. You see what I'm saying? And then the next year they're selling Space Hulk, Epic, Gorka Morka, and they're revising Gothic, Necromunda, and Blood Bowl. You see what I'm saying? And they could keep that cycle up, which is what they were trying to do with Fnatic. And the problem with Games Workshop and Fnatic Games is that they told Fnatic that they could revise rules, but they weren't going to let them release new models.
That
murdered the game, because it's like, congratulations, you can now sell a book, but you can't sell models to support the book, and you're a miniatures company. Like, there was a huge cognitive disconnect there that it was like old-time players and old neckbeards were like, yay, I can use my Vansar gang again. But new players couldn't get in. And here's the deal. Without new players, clubs, games, companies, they all die. Without new players, you have to get new players into the door. You have to hook the kids on the drug young, you know, otherwise they're not going to get into it.
A business like GW thrives on new players. You can't keep the business going on your existing player base. It just won't work.
Well, let's also be rational about this. You are asking, if you asked Matt from 10 years ago to spend $400 to $600 on a miniatures game, build little army men for $600, I'd have done it. Because I was young and I didn't have 3 children and a wife and a house and bills and like crazy obligations. I could blow $600 on a game and it wouldn't be anything for me. Nowadays I have to find spots in my budget for a $60 game. You know? And more to the point, it's can I squeeze this out and can I stretch my gas a little bit to make sure that I've got the cash? It's not exactly that bad, but it's on par, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is this, if you're only shooting for the old gamers, because here's a secret. The last time they published Gothic, the last time they published Necromunda, the last time they published Blood Bowl or Gorkamorka or Epic, all of the guys that are now the old vets in your game store were young, were kids, were 20-year-olds. Uh-huh. Space Hulk's different because they reissued a limited edition run, but really, these guys now, they might buy the updated, cleaned up, eroded rulebook, but they don't really have a need to buy new miniatures because, well, there aren't new 40K ships, you know, or there aren't new Gothic ships. Whereas if you're releasing new Gothic ships, say in plastic or in fine cast or in whatever. Especially with the new artwork team you guys have, with the new modeling team you guys have, like, people will buy this shit. Instead of having the metal miniatures or the crap plastic miniatures, they'll buy this new stuff. So, definitely great idea, and I've pontificated on that probably too much at this point. But, at
That's
any rate.
Fine.
Is
That's
it?
Fine.
Is it? At any rate.
Back in your Kamikaze.
Okay. Forge World also has... one thing real quick. We do need a correction. The Leviathan Pattern Siege Dreadnought was indeed Horus Heresy and not 40K.
Yes, indeedy.
Slight issue there. And then also... Are these Eldar things in the
they
Forge World 40K?
They are indeed Eldar, yes.
I want to look at these while you talk about them.
Oh, you go right ahead. So, yes, they've got some new Eldar stuff out on Forge World, and I don't know if I'm going to be pronouncing this right, but Skathach, or Skathach, which I'm guessing is probably the way it's pronounced, but they are Wraith Knights, armed with either Inferno Lancers or Death Shroud Cannons, which looks oddly like Death Spinners to me. But yes, they are basically Eldar Knights, which are very, very cool.
You know what these are? These are Wraith Knight, Wraith Knight Fire Dragoons and Fire Dragons and Wraith Knight Death
Warp
Spiders.
Warp Spiders.
That's what they are.
That's pretty much
that's
what
they are.
And along with that,
they're Eldar who fit into Eldar who fit into Eldar. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. The Eldar spirits that fit into Eldar that fit into Eldar. with those Wraith Knights, we have a new book, Imperial Armor, The Doom of Mymira, which obviously details these new Wraith Knights as well as numerous other Eldar armor. Also on the Eldar front, they have some new Corsair jet bikes upgrade kits, as well as the jet bikes themselves, available from Forge World as well, which is very nice.
Hey, you know what I just saw?
What's that?
What I just saw was a thing. Give me a second. Okay, so if you are on the Forge World site and you buy any Betrayal at Kolth bundle,
Oh, yes.
You have a chance to win one of five Fire Raptor gunships, which I'm guessing those are the, like...
That's the Chaos, I think, the Fire Raptor?
I don't know, but, like, horror crap. I do like the fact that, to give you an idea, guys, the Betrayal at Kalth set... let's see. There is...
Oh, shut my mouth. The Fire Raptor is a Space Marine gunship.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, so here's the deal. There's the Legion Devastation Force, which is like three Betrayal at Kalths, a bunch of tanks, and a flyer. There's the Legion's Armored Might, which is three Rhinos, a Land Raider, a big-ass tank, and a box of Betrayal at Kalth. And then there are probably some of my favorite, smartest ideas they've done, which is the Kalth box, I guess that's a Kalth novel, and then... shoulder pads, helmets, and torsos for either the Alpha Legion, the Sons of Horus, the Iron Hands, the Raven Guard, the World Eaters, or the Iron Warriors, which is really cool, because you can be like, instead of, because I think the generic miniatures can either be Ultramarines or Word Bearers, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So what this is you can instead have... Oh, and there's like multiple pages. There's Dark Angels. Angels
all,
in the
all
black,
of the other legions.
Word Bearers, Imperial Fists, Death Guard, Blood Angels, Ultramarines, Emperor's Children, White Scars. It looks like all the legions.
It's literally all the other legions, yeah.
You could literally buy a pack, and I'm seeing this for £225, but it's literally any of the legions, which is kind of cool. So you could, like, if you have a particular favorite legion.
Actually.
You
all
go
of them except Space Wolves.
Well, they were busy.
Space Wolves there anywhere.
Well, they were busy.
Still.
Whatever. You don't have the Thousand Suns either, because they were off. Because the problem is this. At the time of Kalth,
they were fighting
Space
each other.
Wolves were beating the crap out of the Thousand Suns.
The Space Wolves were giving the Thousand Suns a spanking for being naughty.
Yep. So... Alrighty. So that is the world of miniatures and the world of Ermagerd.
The world of Ermagerd.
And now we move to the 40K lore. Would you like to open with the quote?
I can open the quote, certainly. The orcs are the pinnacle of creation. For them, the great struggle is won. They have evolved a society which knows no stress or angst. Who are we to judge them? We Eldar who have failed, or the humans on the road to ruin in their turn. And why? Because we sought answers to questions that an orc wouldn't even bother to ask. We see a culture that is strong and despise it as crude. Uthan the Perverse, controversial Eldar philosopher.
Yes, so today we are covering the orcs. Are also, as I love to refer to them, reality-bending warrior space fungus.
As I like to call them, space chavs.
Right, space chavs. You know what's weird? It's like, we don't really, here in the States, we don't really have a comparison, I guess, to chavs.
No.
It's really hard, which kills me, because the first time... Like, it's strange, because the first time I ever heard the phrase chav, and I ended up having to look it up and go look at YouTube videos to figure out what the hell they were talking about, was in the very first season of the rebooted Doctor Who.
Nah.
Because you encounter Cassandra, the last human, and she's literally just a part of her skin that's been, like, genetically preserved or something.
Yeah.
And she changes personalities into Rose Tyler, and as soon as she looks at herself in the mirror, she goes, "Oh, God, I've become a chav." And, like, I didn't know what the hell that was. I just thought it's like, oh, well, she's a cute blonde? I don't know. But apparently it's an acronym for some things, and, like, it's not a compliment.
No, it's quite derogatory.
Meanwhile, that doesn't describe the orcs, because the orcs are reality-bending warrior space fungus. The orc race is believed to have been genetically engineered millennia ago from who knows where. Orc legend attributes their creation to Debrain Boys, a diminutive but extremely intelligent subspecies of orc who bred the Gretchen to be servants and the orcs to be warriors. later evidence establishes that the orcs may have in fact been created by the Old Ones, who are described as creating the Cork as part of a last-ditch attempt to fight off their enemies such as the Necrons and Enslavers. The orcs have had a presence in the galaxy since that time and are known to have first battled mankind long before the foundation of the Imperium, tens of thousands of years ago in the writings of J.R.R. Tolkien, during the Dark Age of Technology. Humans and the orcs have fought innumerable conflicts over this time and are unlikely to ever stop, for reasons we'll discuss later. Mm-hmm. In 544 M32, an orc warlord known simply as the Beast succeeded in uniting much of the orc race and nearly conquered the entire galaxy, leading the largest war ever seen. In the end, it was stopped by an apocalyptic struggle with the Imperium. Gathering of orcs generate a psychic field. In any gathering of orcs generates a psychic field known as the Wa, which allows orcs to instinctively recognize who is quote-unquote bigger and therefore in charge. It's an interesting thing, and we probably cover it later, but as an orc becomes more respected and more impressive and more awesome within their society, they literally get physically larger. Mm-hmm. To the point where Ghazghul Mag-Urukh Thrakath, like one of the greatest orc warlords of all time, the Hand of Gork and Mork, he is the size of a dreadnought.
That's right.
Whereas most orc boys are a little bit bigger, but not too much bigger than a space marine. And in fact, some of them, they look smaller because they're stooped. They walk kind of hunched. But other than that, like orcs start bigger, but not nearly as big as a dreadnought. And that's how big Ghazghul is outside of his armor. So,
oh yeah.
Yep. The Wa seems to warp reality to fit orcish beliefs, allowing ramshackle technology to function properly. If an orc is convinced that their designs are sound and functional, the Wa makes it so. Other races have found that many orcish devices simply don't work unless wielded by an orc. And this goes into something that, we'll cover this. It's an article of faith among orcs that explosives become more powerful when they're painted, and that their vehicles go faster when they're painted red. In fact, funny story, in the Orc Codex, you can spend a point on any vehicle to give it a red paint job, and it goes one inch further.
Yep.
it may sound nonsensical, but because the orcs believe it true, the Wa makes it true. Wa energy can also be manipulated by the Weird Boys in an array of deadly psychic powers. Note, the orcs are not using the warp. They're using the Wa, which is this crazy psychic gestalt thing that they all tap into. Discussing the Wile E. Coyote Bugs Bunny theory of orc consciousness. we cover the rock. The rocks are awesome because rocks are how orcs move from planet to planet, apart from hurling themselves fungally, because they are in fact fungus. To quote
Starship Troopers,
hurling their spore into space. I love B. Arthur. Anyway, or Rue McClanahan. Anyway, so here's the deal. The orcs decide they need to get from planet A to planet B to go crump some humies. So what they do is they take the biggest, killiest rockets that they have, and they strap them to a gigantic asteroid, and they roughly aim the asteroid at the planet they're shooting for, and then they fire it. Now, here's something, and they all get into it, and then they crash onto the planet, and the orcs that survive go off and start their Wa. Now, here's the deal. There's no talk of guidance systems and no compensating for planetary drift because they say or life support systems. There aren't portals that protect them against the vacuum of space. No, in fact, as it was covered in was it Findus Keepers or X Marks the Spot, where the Marines encounter frozen orcs. It was one of them. The orcs were frozen.
I think it was Finders Keepers. I think it might
possibly
have been Finders Keepers.
But the orcs are frozen. But the thing is this, the orcs aren't actually frozen because they're not susceptible to space. Like vacuum, cold, radiation, none of it matters to them because they don't think about it.
They don't believe in it.
Here's the deal. Because the orcs don't believe that they cannot breathe in outer space, then they just don't have to breathe in outer space. That's the power of the Wa. And it leads to some crazy, crazy shit. But that's fine, because orcs... Oh god, orcs.
That's anyway, so freaking trippy, it's amazing.
They're amazing. So, orcs are genetically engineered to be tougher, muscular, aggressive, and primitive-minded. In addition to their warriors, by far the most populous, gatherings of orcs are naturally divided into a cast of odd boys who are genetically predisposed to perform tasks exceedingly well. Indeed, orc creators were apparently able to encode information on how to build and maintain technology in their genetic templates. Mech boys require very little training in their functions since they understand mechanical principles at an instinctive level. And by mechanical principles, we mean, what? We need it to go faster. What are you talking about, tuning up the engine? No, we'll slap some rockets and some red paint on it. Problem solved. Like, the thing is this, humanity cannot comprehend how brutally simplistic orcs are, because it's like, I want to go through the other side of this wall. I want to get to the other side of this wall. Well, I'll just jump over it. Well, I'll just climb over it. Well, I can't climb over it. I don't want to break it down. Oh, I'll take this missile that I'm carrying and I'll strap it to my back and it'll shoot me over the wall. And it works. So, the largest common orc social unit is the tribe. A horde usually comprised of numerous warbands all under the command of a warlord or a warboss. The warlord and the warboss sort of direct the wa. But even these groups cannot truly be classed as stable, as orc tribes are constantly growing, conquering, being conquered, beating each other into death.
or numerous other acts of violence.
Yeah. A warband is a smaller social group, usually led by a warboss. Generally, several such warbands together form a tribe under the strongest warboss. Warbands, in turn, are comprised of various mobs, with a Z. Groups of orcs bound together as social and fighting units, often grouped together by their preferred style of combat, aka boys, shooter boys, slugger boys, looters.
Looters, yeah.
Now, here's... We don't want to blow your brain out too much, although probably it's leaking out of your ears at this point.
And that is a power of the weird boys.
And that is a power of the weird boys. Along with accidentally shooting themselves at things. But yeah, that's beside the point. But the orcs actually have religion. They believe in two gods. There is Gork, the god of cunning brutality, and Mork, the god of brutal cunning. The subtle difference being that Mork hits you when you aren't looking. Gork hits you hard when you are. As such, sometimes orcs can't remember which is which, and they fight over it. Orcs often disagree which is which, and sometimes they fight wars over this matter. Both gods are believed to offer help to individual orcs in battle, but in the grand scheme, it doesn't matter which god is worshipped. Generally, Gork is worshipped by the regular boys as a more direct manifestation of brutal power, whereas Mork is the god of odd boys, the cunning orcs like mechs and weird boys. Titanic orc gargants are constructed in the two gods' image. Consequently, they are living idols and war machines. The mech boys who build them work from a vision held within their imagination, usually inspired during times of war. Ghazghul Mag-Uruk Thraka is the prophet of Gork and Mork, the two gods supposedly guiding his wars of conquest against the Imperium, revealing the best ways of defeating his enemies. This was apparent in the invasions of Armageddon and the subsequent Great War. Also, Ghazghul's never been caught or killed, because he's Ghazghul. He is the hand of Gork and Mork. He's here to take the boys and send them out on killy, crunching war. Anyway.
That's right.
So the orc language... Wow. Oh, wow.
Thanks.
The orc language is bad English. Basically, they sound like ill-educated Londoners.
Yep.
The orc language reflects their nature, being crude and unstable, but possessing more insults and war terms than any other. It's known to consist of many dialects that vary between different clans and worlds. As they migrate across the galaxy, things change. They use loan words. They it's speculated that all orcs at one point spoke the same language, but you probably can't ever get them to all agree on it. The orc language
or anything
can,
for that matter.
Or anything. The orc language can be learned by humans to some extent, such as Commissar Yarek, who learned it from a captured greenskin.
By the age of 11.
By the age of 11, because he's a commissar. Don't turn
awesome.
Around. Don't turn around. Uh-oh. Dear commissar's in town. Uh-oh. The orc language uses a logographic system, which is a form of glyphic script. So pictures. Its core consists of glyphs that indicate clan warband concepts and elements of orc names. These can be augmented by phonetic runes. Basically, it's usually describing ownership, tribal affiliation, or important tasks, like a picture of teeth if its job is to be crunchy and killy. They're not used to write down history or battle manuals, because the orcs really don't care. They have a really strong oral tradition, with myths and legends passed down orc to orc. Only mechs with their jargon write and share useful bits of knowledge, but even then, like we said before, the knowledge is usually hard-coded into the orcs, so there's really no reason for them to learn it.
Exactly.
To learn anything. So, whilst an orc can belong to a tribe, it can also belong to a clan. Tribes are constantly changing, breaking apart, and reforming, but clan ties are stable and enduring. Orc clans are not communities, but rather philosophical lines representing different aspects of the orc character. Each clan has its own kind of markings and symbology. As we know them in Eternal Crusade, they're sub-factions. For example, we have the Blood Moons. They are the richest orc clan due to their teeth growing quicker. Oh, we never covered that. Teeth. So orcs, they are constantly shedding their teeth. So much so that orcs have a constant supply of teeth and they use it as currency. Well... might as well do something.
Yep, they keep falling out, and you got to do something with them.
Right. So the Bad Moons are the richest because their teeth grow quicker. Bad.
Falling into English.
The Bad Moons are the. I'm getting close. I'm trying to stay speaking with my normal accent, but I keep slipping into orc. It's not good. The Bad Moons are the closest thing orcs have to a merchant class. The Blood Axes are distrusted by the other clans because they make use of unorky tactics such as camouflage and even battle plans.
Heresy.
The Death Skulls are looters and scavengers. The Evil Sons epitomize the orcish love of vehicles that go fast and make a lot of noise. The Evil Sons have a high proportion of speed freaks, which are orcs who are, like, addicted to speed and violence and, like, Mad Max. Basically, the Evil Sons are all Mad Max. The Goths are close combat specialists, and the Snakebites are staunch traditionalists who distrust many forms of technology. Basically, if you want to play a Snakebite army, then... build a Warhammer 40k army.
Go play fantasy.
Go build a Warhammer fantasy army, but with round bases, which now becomes a lot easier thanks to Rage of Sigmar. Anyway.
One thing that I didn't put on there, actually. Aren't Goths usually the biggest as well? Because they're usually the ones that run the clans and stuff, or run the tribes.
Yeah, well, the thing is this. Like, the thing about the Goths is that the Goths are, you know, they're doing what orcs are supposed to be doing. They're not odd boys. And so as a result, they grow darker and bigger and meaner. Usually they're leading tribes because they got no problem crumping heads.
Exactly.
And that's the orcs. Oh my god, my head is exploding. I need Tylenol. Anyway, this brings us to our devotions at the faithful, which to this day we still have not received any more. Please submit our iTunes reviews.
Please, Apple, let our reviews go.
Let my reviews go.
Let exactly. our reviews go.
Right. So, to give you guys an idea, we've sort of reached the end of our content. By sort of, I mean we totally have.
More along the lines of we are completely drained
brain.
From
yeah,
that talking about the orc stuff.
Yeah, it's our brains are literally leaking out of our ears. It's that bad. So, what will happen is we will go ahead and we will call it for the night. And to give you guys a reminder, like we did about halfway through the show, we've got our three contests. There's the 100-word essay without violating the NDA. There's follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. All of the things will be all of the awesome. This brings us to the end of our show, obviously. I am Katsu, he is Gigabyte, we are Vox Arcona, and this is our thought for the day.
The human base has got walls and things, see? So if I go up to the wall, all sneaky-like, and blows it up with me bombs, then there'll be a hole in the wall what the lads can go through, see? So when yous lot hear something go boom, you charge, because there will be an hole in the wall. Understand?
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcona, a production of Holosuite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcona. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcona.